Good morning, everybody. Thank you for getting up so early to join in the last day of the forum. And for any of you I haven't met already, I'm Nicola Maratz, and I'm with the Ministry of Community, Sport, and Cultural Development, and I'm one of the LGLA board members. We are having two sets of speakers this morning, two back-to-back sessions. First, we're going to hear from representatives of the Municipal Insurance Association, and then we'll hear from a representative for BC Assessment. And so starting with MIA, we have two presenters with us here today. Tom Barnes, who has been CEO and General Counsel for MIA since 2005. And for any of you who don't know, the Municipal Insurance Association of BC is a reciprocal insurance exchange licensed to provide liability insurance to BC local governments. It was founded in 1987 with 144 subscribers, and it now provides coverage to 172 members, representing 90% of local governments in BC. With Tom is Megan Charlton, who's Assistant General Counsel and Director of Member Services at MIA, and she's responsible for overseeing the Provincial Risk Management Service, the Provision of Risk Management Services, Property Appraisals, their Casual Legal Advice Program, MIA's publications, and other member services. So please join me in welcoming Tom and Megan.
Good morning. I'm Tom. That's Megan. We've kind of got the speakers in reverse order here because the speaker who's going to speak on behalf of the BC Assessment Authority is a fellow named Richard Taylor. And those of you might remember, Richard's best known for his time as the executive director of the UBCM. And hey, this is cool. Do you hear that squeaking? I sometimes have shoes that squeak when I walk. I've never had a stage that squeaked when I talk. I'm glad I took the lapel pin because I can move away from the podium. Anyway, Richard, when he was executive director of the UBCM, he's the guy that actually had the idea that started the MIABC. So, if this next 45 minutes doesn't go well, don't blame Megan and I. Blame Richard, because we're his idea. Just in order to get started, I want to tell you, in life, and you as elected officials are always looking for that win-win situation. And here I'm afraid we're about to deliver the opposite. When Edie called me and asked me to have the MIABC sponsor a breakfast, I didn't think that was going to mean I had to get up and talk at it. When you guys got up for your last breakfast of a three-day conference, and I know what you were probably doing the night before twice, you probably didn't expect that you were going to have to get up and listen to a couple people talk about insurance. But here we are, so let's make the best of it, okay? We're not going to really talk about insurance, so that's one thing you can look forward to. We're going to talk about nobody that's here, so we could be really frank and truthful, but they're people that you might know. And these are elected officials with loose lips and what damage they can cause their local governments and how to just take some simple steps to avoid that. So we're going to go through some of the technical stuff and give you some numbers and tell you a couple stories about how BC local government elected officials have gotten themselves, their employers, and their communities into trouble. And then we'll tell you how you can avoid following in their footsteps. You don't need to know that. Like I said, if things go badly here, you don't need to know us to complain to. Complain to Richard. The MIABC has been around for we're in our 28th year now, and as Nicole said, we insure 90% of the local governments in BC. But we actually only insure 90% of the local governments of BC for their liability. That means if your local government gets sued by somebody for something it did or didn't do, there's a 90% chance it's going to wind up in our office. And we will take responsibility for the lawsuit. We will investigate it. We'll analyze it, figure out how good a claim it is. If it winds up in court, we'll hire a lawyer. We'll take the case to trial. Or if we if it has to be settled, or if there's a judgment, we will pay the cost of that. And for that, we just charge a modest little fee to each of our members. Our liability program, we cover bodily injury, property damage, and errors and omissions claims. What we're going to be talking about is what we classify as an E&O claim. We also provide property and other ancillary coverage to a number of our members, but that is something that we won't go into today, but it's a program we got into just over a year ago, and we've really made a huge impact on all kinds of insurance that's being sold to local governments in BC now. When you get sued for a liability claim, we actually don't cover you for $35 million a claim. That was what we did up until this year. This year, we've increased our coverage to $40 million per claim. But don't take that as license to be even more reckless than you were last year. We would just as soon you would avoid the claims completely. So what we do with this part of the program, as I said, we respond to liability claims that are made against our members. We also facilitate non-claim related legal advice. What does that mean? It's what we call our casual legal advice program. About 10 years ago, we started our own legal department, and we handle about half the claims that are made against our members in-house. It saves our members hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars every year doing that. But what happened when we had lawyers on staff is a lot of your staff thought, hey, it doesn't cost us to talk to lawyers at the MYABC, and they started calling us for legal advice, which we weren't really allowed to give them unless it's related to a claim. So a few years ago, we created a program called our Casual Legal Advice Program, which about two-thirds of our members have subscribed to. And for an annual fee of between $250 and $750, anybody within the organization of the local government has got essentially a hotline they can call and talk to a lawyer about any legal issue that affects the local government for up to half an hour at no further fee. And if the thing's more complicated, then there's some really good preferred rates that are provided that way. And it's become a very popular program for us. And this is one way that your local governments could use our facilities and our programs to avoid claims before they come up, by getting the proper advice when issues first arise. Otherwise, we don't see a problem until after a claim's made. The other thing we do is we provide risk management training and education to our members, and we do that in a whole number of ways. And I'm not going to talk too much about that because that's Megan's job, and she's been very creative in the number of different ways that she provides training and information to our members. And there's a number of programs that we have established and we are establishing that she's responsible for. So where does liability exposure exist for elected officials? As you can tell from the title of the program, it exists somewhere between engaging the mouth and not quite engaging the brain. It's what you say. There's three main things that elected officials could do to get into trouble from a liability point of view. One is make a negligent misrepresentation, or at least be accused of making a negligent misrepresentation. Because what what you're going to find out if you ever get involved in a claim is it costs a ton of money, time, and bother to deal with an appropriate or an inappropriate claim, and even more money to deal with an appropriate one. The other thing elected officials could get caught up in is defamation claims. When you say something or write something inappropriate about somebody else. And then the third thing is something called misfeasance in public office, which is using your position in an inappropriate way. And these are the numbers that we have paid and incurred over the last few years in these types of claims. But these are only the claims that we cover, and I got to make that clear. For example, for a defamation claim, we will cover a claim where you're sued by somebody who alleges that you defamed them, unless that person is also insured by the MIABC. So if you have two members of counsel who get into a shouting match and lawyer up and sue each other for defamation, the members of the MIABC are not going to finance that personal lawsuit. The MIABC is I know reciprocal is a big word. Basically, we're a co-op. We're owned by everybody that's our member. And so our members tell us what coverage they're going to provide. And there have been times in the past where our members have told us they do not want to cover certain things for which we could cover. One of them is they don't want to cover people suing each other for defamation. They don't want their tax dollars being used to finance those kind of claims. The other thing they don't want us to cover, and this was one of the earliest amendments made to our program back in the late 80s, was they don't want to cover wrongful dismissal claims. They don't want the taxpayers of other communities paying for wrongful dismissals of a particular community. So we don't cover that. The cost of legal claims, as I said, you got more than just the actual value of the claim. You've got the legal expenses of dealing with it. On a defamation claim, it probably takes 24 to 36 months to resolve that claim. And if you're the defendant in that claim, you're going to be spending a very uncomfortable period of time dealing with that matter. Your reputation is going to take a hit no matter what, even if you're exonerated in the end. Because the local press particularly, it's almost like there's a ratio. The smaller the paper, the bigger the story. And they love these things. They love writing about the allegations. They love, and you know, the plaintiffs are always really willing to talk to the reporter about how awful they were treated. And then what do you always see the politicians or their lawyers saying? I can't comment on a matter that's before the courts. It's a very awkward position to be in. You've got your own personal costs, your own personal inconvenience, and often if there's a settlement, there's the price of that too. And that's all the prices that are being paid in a claim that doesn't go to court. So if we can just avoid initiating that process, you're going to be a lot better off for it. Now, let's talk first about negligent misrepresentation. It's the easiest claim to run afoul of. Negligence, you know, I'm sorry, I've been cursed with a legal education. Both these words have specific meanings to me. Negligence is simple. It's not being reasonably careful before you do something. Misrepresentation, you may well be making a representation just by saying something. It's nothing formal. It's just something you say. So if you're not reasonably careful about something you say, you can open yourself up to a claim for negligent misrepresentation. Now, from a legal point of view, in order for somebody to prove that they've got a claim for negligent misrepresentation, there's certain elements that have to be demonstrated. First of all, they have to show that what you said was untrue, misleading, or inaccurate. Notice they don't have to prove that you meant to be untruthful, that you meant to mislead them, or you meant to be inaccurate. That's actually fraud. This is negligence. All they have to show is what you said was one of these things, and that you weren't, let's go back to negligent, reasonably careful before you said that. And remember, these allegations are always being evaluated after the fact. So you got to be thinking ahead in order to not be covering your tracks. The other thing is there's got to be some sort of special relationship between you and the person you're talking to. I think in first year law, we spent 5 weeks in torts class reading cases about what constitutes a special relationship and what doesn't. Your breakfast isn't long enough to go into there, and you will well be bored and complaining to Richard if I tell you. Just trust me on this. If you're an elected official and you're talking or writing or emailing with somebody who has voted for you or could vote for you or has business with your community, has some economic interest in something that's before your council, you can pretty much bank on the fact you've got a special relationship in this context. If one of our lawyers finds some way to dig you out of that relationship, that's a great move on his or her part, but you can bank on the fact when you're involved in one of those conversations, you're involved in a special relationship. The other thing, getting back to negligence, did you exercise insufficient care before you said what you said? And remember, this is going to be analyzed after you've said it and after something bad happened. And somebody is going backwards saying, could you have done something easily which would have made you better informed on the subject? Could you have talked to your planning department before you started telling them what the zoning bylaw meant? Could you have checked with the mayor before you found out when something was on the agenda? And the answer to that is almost always yes. And then it's a matter of, well, would it have been reasonable for you to do that? Remember, we're always dealing with these after the fact. The other thing is, was the reliance? The plaintiff, the claimant, has to have relied on what you said reasonably. And we run into lots of problems there, but look what happens before you're going to say, I was just having a beer, and somebody asked me something, and I told them to the best of my recollection what was going on. How could they go out and buy all that property reasonably based on what I said? Okay. Good point. The problem is, look where we are before we're talking about it. We've already got them at, yeah, what I said was untrue, misleading, or inaccurate. Yeah, I knew we had a special relationship, and yeah, I didn't take really proper care in figuring things out before I said anything. But come on. How could you reasonably rely on what I was telling you? You see, that it's hard to be in front of a judge or jury and being down there. The other thing is they actually have to lose something. And this is where we actually do have big fights, especially with developers. Because if any of you know a developer, you know the project that didn't go ahead was going to be the mother lode of all projects. There were millions and millions and millions of dollars of profits just there to be taken until you screwed up the zoning application. Or until people put conditions on things, like needing to make sure that the cliff wouldn't slide into the ocean before the house was built on top. By the way, these are all subjects of claims. And what the law is no, you're not entitled to your lost profits. You're entitled to what you lost as a result of the representation being made. We're not guaranteeing what we said untruthfully was true. But even then, there could be out-of-pocket expenses that could total millions of dollars, and we've seen claims like that. So that's what the claim really is. Where the red flag for you is where the party seeking information has an economic interest that's likely tied to the response, that's a red flag. in whatever context that situation arises. And so you've got to step back. And remember, if you're the elected official, the reason somebody's coming to you is probably because they haven't got the right answer from somebody on your staff. And what you want to do is find out whether the right answer was to the appropriate question or not. So we'll get to some simple steps to take. But one of the things you have to do is, if you don't know everything about something, perhaps the best default answer is, I'll look into that for you. Rather than saying, wow, that's terrible, we'll make sure that gets taken care of. So I got to talk a little bit more at the end. We're going to give you a couple of pointers that you should always bear in mind. But in the meantime, I know you guys really want to hear about how people can get into trouble saying mean things to other people. So I got to turn it over to Megan, and she'll take you through defamation.
Thank you, Tom. So defamation arises, or liability for defamation arises, where you say something about someone else, about a third party or a corporation or another entity, and it has a negative impact on their reputation. And the law of defamation is really about it's a balancing act. There is a misconception, particularly in North America, that we have an unrestricted right to freedom of expression, that we can essentially say whatever we like, and that will be protected by the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And that's simply not the case. The law of defamation is really about weighing that right of free speech with the right of a person to protect their reputation. Defamation, in order to make out defamation, it's not that easy. The plaintiff has to make out three things. They have to be able to establish that whatever they said had a negative impact on the plaintiff. They also have to be able to establish that the words related to the plaintiff. So it can't be sort of a general comment or criticism that the plaintiff takes offense to. It has to specifically refer to the plaintiff either by name or by description. And the communications also have to be published. So it can be in writing or it can be something that's said, but someone else besides the person who's making the statement and the person whom the statement's about, someone else has to hear it, because that's how it will impact their reputation. Now, when you're looking at whether or not something has had a negative impact on the plaintiff, the court is really going to look at whether or not it's caused other members of society to shun that person or to avoid that person, or whether it's lowered the estimation of the plaintiff in the minds of right-thinking members of society. One example that you might be aware of, I don't know how many people are following the Gian Gomeshi trial this week. So the trial just started this week of Gian Gomeshi, and for those of you who are not familiar with this case, Mr. Gomeshi was a popular host of a popular radio program on the CBC called Q. And in the fall of 2014, he got into an employment dispute with the CBC that was fairly public. Mr. Gomeshi was terminated on the basis of certain accusations about his personal life, that he had engaged in some fairly shocking and violent sexual escapades. And that led to Mr. Gomeshi's termination and led to the subsequent criminal trial that started this week. Now, you can see how, if those allegations bear out to be untrue, as Mr. Gomeshi claims, that would have a significant impact on Mr. Gomeshi's reputation, his career, and what the court is really going to look at if Mr. Gomeshi did pursue a defamation claim against those who made those allegations against him or against the CBC, is whether or not those allegations that statement that said had an impact on his ability to earn income, okay? And that's going to be sort of a key factor in establishing defamation. But just because defamation is difficult to prove doesn't mean that parties don't engage in it all the time, and you incur expenses because of the fees associated with defending the litigation. You know, often defamation claims don't go to trial, they settle, but there certainly is a lot of money that's spent, a lot of time that's wasted, and a lot of stress that's associated when you've got two people's reputation on the line, right? Some real-life examples in preparing for this presentation. I took a look at the case law to see where courts had decided that certain comments made by elected officials constituted defamation. There was an instance where accusing a mayor to have been misusing taxpayer money to further his own career, that was found to be defamation. Accusing a police officer of being drunk on duty. Calling another council member a sick son of a bee. And suggesting another council member is one of the biggest jokes to have been elected in a long time. Those are all constitute defamation. Now, some of these, as Tom was talking about, might fall in the insured versus insured exclusion category, so they wouldn't be covered. For instance, if it's one council member suggesting another council member is one of the biggest jokes of all time, that's something that the councillor who made that statement is going to be paying out of their own pocket, or the local government will be paying out of their own pocket to defend the claim, because that's not going to be covered by your insurance policy. We had a claim a number of years ago that went to trial. It went to trial in 2010. And this is an example of a situation in which you think you're doing the right thing, but you really need to be cautious about what you say and who you say it to. So in this case, involved the plaintiff, Mr. Hunter. Now, Mr. Hunter was a member of a local recreation commission. Mr. Hunter had had a very successful career in which he was an expert in parks and recreation. He was the director of a number of parks and recreation departments and local governments across the province. And when he retired, he got into the consulting business. He was considered an expert in the field. He was retained by the Recreation Commission that he later sat on to help them develop their strategic plan. And in the strategic planning process, the Recreation Commission determined that they wanted to expand the local recreation center. They wanted to expand the pool, and they wanted to create a 52-foot water slide. Now, initially, the local government council, really supported this idea. But as you can imagine, things heat up in the community, and a particular group of citizens, of property owners, decided that they didn't like this idea because they thought that the construction of the water slide would obstruct their views and thus lower their property values. So there was a debate amongst council. Things started to heat up, and council changed their position and decided not to support the project. The Recreation Commission went ahead and approved it, but the issue in this case was a series of conversations that one of the local government councillors had. He had a conversation with a couple of people in which he suggested that Mr. Hunter was in a conflict of interest by sitting and voting in favor of the Recreation Commission expansion project because he had been involved in the strategic planning. And in fact, he went on to say that Mr. Hunter was in a conflict of interest and he was going to investigate with his professional association whether or not there should be some sort of consequences. Mr. Hunter, the court found, this case went to trial. It was, again, protracted litigation that involved a lot of time and preparation and documents and expense. And the court found that Mr. Hunter was, in fact, not in a conflict of interest. The court also found that the conversation that this counselor had with a member of the public, stating that he thought that Mr. Hunter was in conflict of interest, was defamatory because it had the potential of lowering or impacting on Mr. Hunter's reputation and potentially preventing him from engaging in other consulting contracts, right? So that's a situation you can see where the counselor thought, you know what, I'm just raising an issue that I think should be investigated, But by saying it to someone, a member of the public, you're really, without verifying that there, in fact, is a conflict of interest there, you're really doing damage and in fact, engaging in defamation. Which leads me to our first piece of advice. Be 100% sure, or 110% sure of your answer or qualify it.
I'm trying to remember what the next slide is. You see, I have a bad habit of starting to giving presentations and talking ahead of my notes before I'm done my presentation and I've got slides and notes left over. But here's you've already been given the practical advice, I'm sure, that you need to know. At some point after you were elected, the squeak has followed me over to this part of the state. At some point after you were elected, I'm sure every community has somebody with a job description that includes the phrase communications in it. The person that's responsible for dealing with the press, for making statements. And at some point after you were elected, you probably were sat down or were in a room and the communications officer came in and gave you the three golden rules that you have to bear in mind every time you're dealing with a reporter. You know them, right? No. I've got to have it. They're going to have to engage me at the communications officers conference later. The three rules before you talk to a reporter. Three. One, know your message before you talk to the reporter. That's simple. I mean, why would you talk to anybody without knowing what it is you want to say? Two, your message must have 3 points. Right? Do you know that? You have to make 3 points. Not 2 points, not 12 points, 3 points. Everybody knows that. When you're dealing with the media, when you're dealing with anybody, you make 3 points. You ask anybody at the MIABC, what does the MIABC do? They will tell you it contributes to the financial stability of communities in British Columbia by providing insurance at stable rates, low cost, and risk management services. Any one of my staff will tell you that. 3 points. And anybody telling you about dealing with the press, you make 3 points. Okay? Point one, know what your message is. Point two, it's got to be 3 points. And point three, whenever you're dealing with a reporter, nothing is off the record. You know that. You didn't know that? Okay, well, now you know that. Now you can understand why you keep getting misquoted in the local paper and why things don't come out right. I mean, that's your job, is to protect you. You don't want to come out of your encounter with a reporter any the worse off for that encounter. In fact, your preference would be to come out a little better off, and the way you're going to come out better off is your message is going to be delivered to the reporter. And the reason you know that your message is going to be delivered is because you know what your message is, and your message could be summarized in 3 points, and you know that no matter what the reporter says, this conversation is going to find its way on the record, especially if you mess up steps one or step two. Well, what you have to do is remember that those guidelines, whenever you talk to anybody that's got an economic interest in something that's before your community. Before you talk to anybody, you have to know what your message is going to be. And that message has to have 3 points to it. And no matter what's happening with the conversation, it is going to be remembered. And it might not be remembered by you, because you're going to have people talk to you all the time. And they're going to talk to you for a reason. They want something from your community. They want something from you. And chances, there's an 80% chance that when they're talking to you, the reason they're talking to you is because they're not getting what they want. And before you respond, you have to know what it is you're going to say to them. It's got to be something you can remember, because they're going to remember it. And if you have an absolute rule that when you get advised or your people come to you informally, that you don't say anything other than, I'll look into it, that's the best answer. That's a one-point message. Write me. Tell me what's going on. Put it in paper, and I'll look into it. And remember that. Never give advice, never engage, never tell people. And I think this is the next slide, so I'm going to go there right now. Never meet a developer for coffee at a white spot. I don't know what it is about developers. They always want to have a coffee with elected officials. I don't know why. Maybe you look like you need a little jolt of caffeine, but and these are people, gosh, you know them. They're probably prominent people in your community. They could be your friends. They could have helped finance your campaign, and things aren't going quite right. And gee, can we get together for a coffee? How about we meet tomorrow morning at the white spot? I don't know why it's always the white spot. This is Canada. It should be Tim Hortons. No, it's BC, and it's the white spot. And there are at least two claims from the last year I remember where the elected official got into trouble in a white spot. And it had nothing to do with the triple O sauce. One meeting was a mayor, the developer wanted to come. There was a piece of property on the waterfront, the last great development opportunity probably on the entire West Coast. At least it was by the time the claim was made. And the mayor wanted it developed. This was going to be he had this great vision for what this property, this development was going to, it would have housing and amenities and a wharf and a pier. And it would, you know, and he was, it hopefully the park in there, oh yeah, it's going to have a park, just needing a name. And I think he had a pretty good idea who that park should be named after. But nothing was going right for the mayor. There were problems with regulators. There were problems with the province that had, unfortunately, control over the access to this property, which was why it wasn't developed. You couldn't get to it. And the developer was in whole hog, had borrowed tons of money to develop this thing, and he wasn't getting anywhere with these things. And the council was split as to whether he wanted to go with the development. And so the developer, in desperation, went to his playbook and said, you know what, I better meet the mayor for coffee. Phoned him up, said, let's meet at the white spot. And the mayor, the developer was getting discouraged. And the mayor was, he didn't want the developer to give up. So he's giving him a pep talk. And he's, you know, like, you know, council split 4-4 on this. I'm the deciding vote. And here's what I'll do. You know, you can count on my support. First of all, I don't like the architect you've got. I think you should change the architect. I think we should, you know, and I think your proposal should have a few more amenities. And don't worry about the access thing. We'll take care of that. And so the developer went out and hired a new architect, and they changed the proposal and never did get the access. And it turned out the mayor had miscounted the vote because he didn't actually control what would happen. And because of that conversation in the white spot, and there might have been a few others, we had a claim come at us that was like $35 million because this was going to be the jewel of the West Coast. Now, it wound up, we whittled that, but we paid a lot of money on that claim. And it never saw the light of day because we would have paid a lot more money on that claim. And it all could have been avoided. Another example, this was a case that did go to trial, involved a liquor store. And there was somebody wanted to have a liquor store someplace, and there was a fight about it because it was all one of these licensing squabbles. And one of the locations was going to be on a native development just outside of town. And a couple of the counselors found this incredibly inappropriate. And it became a big local issue. And so the proponent decided, what should I do? I got to talk to a couple of these guys. I know, I'll invite them for a coffee at the White Spot, and we can find out what's going on. And they have the discussion. And one of the counselors expresses some inappropriate views about why he can't support having the liquor store where it's proposed. The motion goes before council, it fails, the lawsuit starts because expressing inappropriate reasons in public for why you're going to vote on something you actually should. I think you've heard this lecture. You should wait till you hear everything before you express why you're not voting for or against something. Even if you know, it's kind of basic. I'm sure you've had a lawyer or two come and tell you that. Just keep your thoughts to yourself until everybody's finished talking and then make your vote. But somehow there's something about coffee at the White Spot that loosens people's lips a bit. The fortunate thing to happen for this community was that the vote was, I think it was 5-3. So even if the inappropriate vote were taken out of the equation, the court concluded that the resolution was properly passed and that there was no basis to the claim. But there's still tens of thousands of dollars expended defending the claim, going to court, all the time. And you think of the number of staff time and the time, every counselor had an uncomfortable discussion with a lawyer or two about why they voted the way they did and who they listened to and how often they went to the White Spot. So, remember those three things about dealing with the press, and somebody asks you for coffee at the White Spot. My advice to you, nothing against the White Spot, but if somebody wants to talk about something that's going on, an application before council at the White Spot, just say no. Yeah, don't say no, we'll go to Tim Hortons, because I suspect that the coffee might still have the same effect there. Secondly, is this yours or mine? Okay, the second thing, have a communication plan. That's why you have a communication officer. They're professionals at dealing not only with the press, but with people. People are coming in to your municipal hall every day, and they're asking a ton of questions from a bunch of different people about important things like zoning and building and development, all sorts of stuff, and you have staff that are not only trained to deal with them, but they know the details, and you've got somebody, if things reach a certain level, that know how to communicate with it, and you have to know what your plan is for communicating with all these people that are dealing with City Hall. And lastly, I know this is hard, especially as we're watching the Republican primaries, but don't make promises you can't keep. Make promises you want to keep, work towards it, but this is where you get into that misrepresentation thing. He told me he was going to, especially when you got something come before council. I don't know about your council, but I find anything that involves a vote is inherently unpredictable. So the best you could do is get something in front of the council for a vote, but you can't make promises about a result. The only other thing I'll tell you before we conclude is when we get a claim, every claim against an MIABC member is determined strictly on its legal merits. We look at a claim, and if there's liability there, if there's a problem, we're going to settle it. If there's a defense, we're going to fight it. Sometimes people don't like that decision, and they might go to you wondering why their claim isn't being paid. And you might want to do them a favor by promising them that you'll see about getting that claim paid. Correct answer is, I got to find out what's going on with that claim. and find out why it's not being paid. And talk to you. Every one of you that's a member of the MIA have somebody on staff whose role is to be the liaison with us. Find out who that person is, and they'll get a hold of the person that's dealing with the claim, and we will do whatever it takes to explain why that claim is being handled the way it is. And that'll go right. We actually have staff probably once a month or so appearing at council meetings to discuss contentious claims so that everybody understands what's going on with it. And it's part of the service we provide. And the perfect ending to this is we tried to leave time for questions, but it's time for Richard to come and explain himself for why he created this organization to come and talk to you about insurance at breakfast in the first place. So if you have questions, just let Aaron or anybody know. We're easy to find. MIABC.org is our website. You could get a hold of us there. Our email's on it, our phone numbers. And let us know if you've got questions, and we'll let your CAO know you're talking out of turn. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Tom and Megan. We really appreciate you taking the time to be here, and that was very informative. If you do have questions afterwards, they will be around for a few minutes. And also just want to say thank you for the breakfast that you're having, as both MIA and BC Assessment are the sponsors of this morning's breakfast, and they're strong supporters of the LGLA.